Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I am Ibi Dawji, and of course, this is the Big Picture. Ahlan wa sahlan. Welcome, especially to my friend in Uitenhage, a regular listener. Okay, let's get down to the weird and wonderful stories that made it into the media. Did you hear about the big fancy hotel that just opened in Bree Street, Cape Town? It's the biggest in the world. Did you hear that? It's the biggest in the world. Yeah. And let me tell you this. Things are really gone to the dogs here in South Africa. Seriously. The price for staying at this hotel are quite incredible. Shocking, in fact. Shocking. One night stay at this hotel will cost you, are you ready for this? 285 rands. That's right. 285 rand. And if you want the presidential suite, that will cost you 1,500 rands a night. Isn't that ridiculous? So as I told you, things are really gone to the dogs. Actually, to be more accurate, things have gone to the cats and dogs. By now, my dear listeners, you must be wondering what I have been smoking. Okay, let me tell you the full story, okay? Let me read to you from an article from the Business Insider website. It says, an enormous cat and dog hotel, the 2,400 square meter at Fritz Hotel, opened in Bree Street, Cape Town on Thursday. Starting at 285 rands per night, the hotel offers scheduled feeding, constant supervision, and a constant live feed to ensure owners that the animals are well taken care of. So there you are. If you're on the internet, you get a live feed, camera pointing at your cat or dog, so that you know what's happening at that hotel. And for a cool 1,500, dog owners can treat their animals at Fritz Hotel Presidential Suite, which features mood lighting and a TV. The 56 rooms are each decorated according to doggy inspired themes. Hey? Some of the rooms are called Hollywood. One is called Jurassic Bark. And I like this one, Dognald Trump. Dognald Trump. That's the name of the rooms. And founder, and this was said by founder Yannick Clouet. She says, we've priced it in such a manner that the rooms don't cost much more than what an owner would pay to have someone house sit. We want to make it as accessible as possible, that a young person in a new job will still be able to bring their loved one when they have to head to work. Clouet founded the At Fritz Hotel, named after her beloved pup, Fritz, in 2010 while she was studying for her MBA degree at Stellenbosch Business School. She says, I was sitting in class wondering why no one has done something similar in South Africa. And that December, At Fritz was born. And that December, At Fritz, that was in 2010, the doggy hotel relocated from Castle Street in Cape Town to Bree Street when demand exceeded supply. So now it's a big hotel. And over the past 8 years, At Fritz has housed more than 92,000 dogs. The new hotel now also includes 32 cat rooms and a doggy swimming pool. We can now comfortably cater to over 350 dogs and 30 cats per day. I am still in awe of it all, she says. The hotel's cat rooms have already been booked out for December. Wow. Situation is even worse than hotel bookings in Durban in December. This dog and cat. So, dear listeners, what do you make of that? A hotel for cats and dogs. But you know what's the part that I like the most? if you book your kutro or kutta into the presidential suite, he will have the privilege of mood lighting and a TV. Mood lighting. How are you going to make out whether the dog is depressed or whether he's happy or whether he's got something on his mind or looking just sort of like philosophical or something? Eh? So what kind of movie are you going to play for him? Maybe Dog Day Afternoon or maybe 101 Dalmatians. And how can you put, as I said, the right kind of lighting. Well, dear listeners, what did I tell you? Things are really gone to the dogs and cats. Okay, now to the next story. But let me begin by making an observation. It is my view that every 5 minutes, somewhere in the world, a mampara is born. I'm serious. In fact, there is an oversupply of such creatures. Every now and then you come across them. You come across a first-class ulu. You can't avoid them. And here is a classic one. Now, we all know that in this day and age, it's almost normal now for people to legally change their gender. A man can apply to be legally declared as a female. You heard about these terms, transgender and so on. Let me not go too deep into that. So, a man in the Netherlands has taken a very unusual step. Listen to this, and this is from the British Guardian newspaper. It says here, a 69-year-old Dutch motivational speaker, also known as a positivity guru. Wow, Idris Kamisa, are you listening? Positivity guru, who says he does not feel his age, has started a battle to make himself legally 20 years younger on the grounds that he is being discriminated against on a dating app. Emile Rattelband told a court in Arnhem, in the Netherlands, that he did not feel, in his words, comfortable with his date of birth, and compared his wish to alter it to people who identified as transgender and therefore altered their gender. Rattelband said that due to having an official age that did not reflect his emotional state, he was struggling to find both work and love. He has asked for his date of birth to be changed from 11 March 1949 to 11 March 1969. He says, when I'm 69, I am limited. If I'm 49, then I can buy a new house, drive a different car. I can take up more work. When I'm on Tinder, which is a dating site, and it says I'm 69, I don't get any answer. When I'm 49, with the face I have, I will be in a luxurious position. Rattelband argued that doctors had told him his body was that of a 45-year-old man. The judge conceded that the ability to change gender was a development in the law. The judge says, I agree with you. A lot of years ago, we thought that was impossible. But he asked the applicant how his parents would feel about 20 years of Rattelband's life being wiped off the records. The judge asked, for whom did your parents care? Who was that little boy then? Rattelband, a motivational speaker and trainer in neuro-linguistic programming, said his parents were dead. He also said he was willing to renounce his right to a pension to ensure there was no unforeseen consequences of his age change. At the end of a 45-minute court session, Rattelband said, it is really a question of free will. Free will. Rattelband's lawyer, Jan Hein Kapers, said it was high time for the reversal of age. The public prosecutor in the court asked whether the ability to change a date of birth in the law would require health inspectors in the future to allow the state to correctly judge someone's emotional age. Kapers told the court, that his defense attorney told the court, There is also something like common sense, of course. I like the last part. There is also something like common sense. That's what his lawyer says. Well, I have discovered, after much research, dear listeners, that the trouble with common sense is that it's not so common. So this fellow believes that he should be declared to be 20 years younger because he looks and feels young. Well, let me tell you this. Here's a little confession. I feel the same way. And in fact, just yesterday, a chap came up to me and said, "Ebi Dauji, you know what? You don't look a day over 40. Well, as you can imagine, I was thrilled by his observation. I answered, "Really? You mean that? I don't look a day over 40? He then said with a big smile, "You don't look a day over 40, not a day. Maybe years, maybe 20 years over 40. Then he laughed in a mocking way and dashed away. Oof, I'm never going to speak to that chap again. What a rotter. Okay, let's get into some serious stuff, okay? Serious stuff. On Wednesday, former U.S. Marine Ian Long, he was in Afghanistan for a long time, and he's a U.S. Marine, he's been in the military, of course, entered a Ian Long entered a country and western music bar and killed 12 people. Yeah, you must have come across that. He went into a country and western bar and opened fire and killed 12 people. On Friday, yesterday that is, Donald Trump commented on the killings. He described the shooter as a very sick puppy. Donald Trump described the shooter as a very sick puppy. Donald Trump described the killer of 12 people as a very sick puppy who had a lot of problems. Ah, shame, eh? A sick puppy. Makes me so sad, eh? Makes me so sad. A sick puppy. Tears are filling into my eyes. Ian Long, 28 years old. What if his name was not Ian Long? What if it was, for example, Muhammad Hussein bin Ali? Would he be described as a sick puppy? Not a chance. The headlines would be screaming, "An ISIS-inspired Islamist jihadist terrorist who shouted Allahu Akbar as he mowed down innocent young people as they were having good clean fun." That's what it would be. ISIS-inspired Islamist and jihadist terrorists. That would be the screaming headlines all over the place. That, of course, is a little different from sick puppy, ne? A very sick puppy. I don't think they'll call him that. So while I'm at it, on the subject, let's look at some of the terminology that is used by the so-called Western media. Western media. Take the word jihad. Broadly speaking, it means struggle. Ironically, let me quote to you from the BBC website. It says a Muslim used the word jihad to describe three different kinds of struggle. Number one, a believer's internal struggle to live out the Muslim faith as well as possible. You got that? A believer's internal struggle to live out the Muslim faith as well as possible. Number two, the struggle to build a good Muslim society. Number three, holy war. The struggle to defend Islam with force if necessary. So there you are. That's a Western source, the BBC. I wish they would read their own stuff. Let's look at all three. First, a believer's internal struggle to live out the Muslim faith as well as possible. Meaning, to improve oneself. Isn't that nice? Number two, the struggle to build a good Muslim society. Nothing wrong with that. It's, of course, a positive thing. Number three, holy war, the struggle to defend Islam with force if necessary. If necessary. So if you are attacked, it's the natural thing to defend yourself. Nothing wrong with that also. So it's all good stuff, isn't it? All good stuff. The word jihad to describe the struggle to improve. But the word jihadist is attached today to any loony with a Muslim name who kills innocent people. I remember in June 2016, a fellow by the name of Umar Mateen, he shot 49 people dead and injured 53 others at a gay club in Orlando, Florida. The immediate response, screaming headline from political analysts and TV commentators was that he was a jihadist. That Islam somehow inspired him to kill homosexuals because Islam is against homosexuals, so he was in some sort of jihad. And this committed Muslim decided to act according to the teachings of Islam. A jihadist! Wow! Well, as the story unfolded, it was discovered that this character, Umar Mateen, actually visited the gay club frequently, and he also made friends via a gay app, internet app, and that his father discovered this on his computer. And that made him crazy as he was about to be exposed. And he was, of course, he was married and all of that. And therefore, there was an element of self-hate that he had these new feelings for other men and so on. So in his mind, he was hitting out at those he saw as evil, the gays, who he liked, in fact, but tried to resist being like them. All this is, of course, some sort of psychological conflict which led him to lose it. And so he decided to finish it all off, finish himself, finish all the gays and so on. Shame, eh? He was never a sick puppy. But his name was Umar, so he was a jihadist. Jihad is, as I defined it, either a good thing, as I defined it earlier, a good thing, of course, as Muslims see it, but today the label is put on any Muslim who does bad things. What about the term Islamists? Where does it come from? What does it mean? The followers of Islam are called Muslims. We know that. So where did this term come from? At one time, of course, long ago, they were called Mohammedans. That is, followers of Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But that, of course, was corrected, and only the term Muslim was used. So where did the word Islamist come from? And I googled it. Nobody knows exactly its origin or its real meaning. But a fellow by the name of David Briggs, who writes a regular column for something called the Association of Religion the Association of Religion Data Archives. He said in an article in the Huffington Post, the modern use of the term Islamist is a Western creation. Western creation. Right. It's time for a break, an ad break, and when I come back, I'll tell you more about Islamists. Right, welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture, of course. Now, before the break, I was discussing this term Islamists, wondering where it came from. What does it actually mean? And a guy by the name of David Briggs, who writes about religion, he says the modern use of the term Islamist is the Western creation. Well, there I must agree. I have never heard a Muslim describe himself as an Islamist. I'm a Muslim, that's it. So yes, this word originated in the West. I went to Wikipedia to see where the word came from and what it meant. No luck there, just about 20 different meanings. But I found something that actually summed it up. It sums this word up very well. The Council on American-Islamic Relations said that the word Islamist had become a pejorative shorthand. That means a negative word, a negative shorthand in the media for Muslims we don't like. So in the media, in America and elsewhere in the Western world, if they don't like you, they call you Islamist. I think that puts it very well. I think that's a good one. It's used negatively, and Islamist is a person who is so steeped in his religion that it makes him loony, makes him nuts, makes him crazy, and therefore he does crazy things. That's the kind of image projected by the word Islamist. That's what it denotes. So in the end, we really don't have a definition of the word. It's just used loosely to mean anything. A label, as I said, for Muslims, we don't like. But I said it before, the word Islamists has a nice ring about it. Nice ring about it. Sounds very nice. In fact, I was thinking of using that name to name a new deodorant that I'm thinking of marketing. When you spray a deodorant, it goes mist, you get like a mist. The sound and the spray, mist. So, the name will be appropriate. I can call it the all new Islamist deodorant. Halal, of course. The all new Islamist deodorant. I could have a very catchy advertising slogan. Yeah, I've already developed it, eh? When you go to Checkers with your list, make sure to put on Islamist. How's that, eh? When you go to Checkers with your list, make sure to put on Islamist. Can you see how clever that is, eh? A double meaning. Make sure you put on Islamist, meaning you spray it onto yourself, and also it means put it on your list. Hey, you must admit I'm a genius, right? But today, all these messages are put in some sort of a new form, like rap. You heard of rap? I'm not talking about when you buy some bread in the old days and you try to wrap it up. Rap. So here goes. I'm going to do it in a rap style. Yo, man! Be you a stinking communist or a smelly capitalist, get back on track, Jack, with just a spray of Islamist. You got that? Yo, man, be you a stinking communist or a smelly capitalist, get back on track, Jack, with just a spray of Islamist. How's that, eh? Hey? You think I'll make it for the Pulitzer Prize for poetry? Anyway, my point was that the Western media, and also we ourselves, use these terms, jihadist and Islamist, in a negative sense, and we should actually discourage it vigorously. Right, let's move on to something else. My man, Donald J. Trump. That's right, Donald Jungly Trump. What a guy, eh? There's always something new coming from him, almost every day. Great words of wisdom in tweets from this tweet. Magic stuff. He's never boring like that smooth-talking, intellectual-sounding Barack Obama with his brilliant, engaging smile hiding the waves of drones that killed innocent Muslim civilians in faraway places. That Colgate smile of his. Our Donald Duck is a rough and tumble guy. Straight talking. Nothing upstairs. Brash and bumbling and overgrown bully. I like him. I speak about him every week. If I didn't have him, then this program would be very short indeed. Probably about 15 minutes. Or even very difficult if I had to speak about some other president every week. For example, the recent president of Madagascar. You know, there are elections going on right there now in Madagascar. Let me say this. I have always considered listeners of the Big Picture to be highly intelligent, astute, and above all, extremely knowledgeable. So, tell me this. Who was the recent president, just before these elections, who was the recent president of Madagascar? Come on, that's an easy one, eh? Please, one at a time, please. Lots of hands there. Okay, I see you all have got the answer. And the name is, let me spell it out for you. Rajaonareimampianini. Yeah, that's one name. All one word. Let me try to pronounce it. Rajaonareimampianina. Rajaonareimampianina. President of Madagascar. Imagine if he was the President of the United States and I had to mention his name every week. Sure, my tongue will get sprained. President Harry Rajaonareimampianina. So, it's so easy to say Donald Trump or just jungly. And as I said, there's always something new from him every day. And today, Saturday, I woke up to some new developments regarding my man. The Wall Street Journal reported on Friday that Trump knew about payments that his lawyer made to two women he had affairs with. He always denied it. He said that he never had any affairs with them, nor did he know what payments were made to them by his lawyer. I think it was the amount of $130,000, known as hush money, to keep them quiet. Here's CNN. It says, federal prosecutors prepared a detailed 80-page indictment, which is a charge against Michael Cohen, that outlined President Donald Trump's role in directing payments to women to keep quiet about alleged affairs, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday. The report adds new details to Cohen's comments in court when he pleaded guilty in August, in which he said the payments to the women were coordinated with Trump. Trump was involved in or briefed on nearly every step of the payments that were made to former Playboy model Karen McDougal and adult film actress Stephanie Clifford, who goes by the name of the stage name of Stormy Daniels, to keep quiet about the alleged affair with Trump. And the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan gathered information about Trump's participation. Stormy Daniels, huh? Lots of storms coming up for my friend Donald. The 22-page document prosecutors ultimately filed against Cohen alleged that he coordinated with one or more members of Trump's campaign. In court, Cohen admitted that in coordination and at the direction of a candidate for federal office. Of course, he didn't give the name at that time in August, but now it's all out. He says, yes, Donald knew all about the payments. And Donald said, no, he didn't. So there you are, folks. It's going to hit the fan very soon. The big pugla is a first-class liar. He just lies. For example, he said he knew Vladimir Putin. He knew him very well. And a few months later, he said, no, I don't know him at all. Today, Saturday, outside the White House, as he was leaving for Paris. Oh, and just very quickly, before he left, he had some bad things to say about French President Macron. And so he's going to meet him there in Paris. They're going to have some First World War anniversary commemoration or something like that. So all the leaders are going to be there. So he had some bad things. But anyway, that's another story. But about his quick, informal interview before he left, he made this statement about Matt Whitaker. Remember the name, Matt Whitaker. He said he didn't know Matt Whitaker. This morning he said that. But CNN, which I was watching, played a clip showing that on 11th October, Donald Trump said, I know Matt Whitaker very well. Sure. Jungli's backside must be having lots of blisters. His pants is constantly on fire. So, who is Matt Whitaker? Donald Trump fired the U.S. Attorney General. That is the highest lawman in the land. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Jeff wouldn't do what Donald wanted him to do. There is a special commission that was set up some time ago under the chairmanship of Robert Mueller. Big investigation. Just like the one we have here about state capture. The job of this commission is to investigate whether the Russians interfered in the 2016 U.S. elections, and thereby, by interfering, they got Donald Trump elected. So that's what Robert Mueller is busy with at the moment. Of course, Donald Trump is unhappy about this commission and expected his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, to somehow shut it down, cap funding for it or something. But Jeff Sessions would do no such thing. So last week, Donald Trump fired, he didn't really fire him, he put so much of pressure, and basically Sessions had to resign. And the new Attorney General has been nominated by Donald Trump, and he is Matt Whitaker. Matt Whitaker has been reported to have said many, many times that the Mueller investigation is wrong, it should be very limited, and in fact funding should be cut off, federal funding should be cut off so that it can die, and that would be the end of that. So there you are, folks. Guess what will be the next step now that Matt Whitaker is going to be Attorney General? I'm sure you can guess. And Donald on Friday said, I didn't know him. I just know that he is a very capable and competent guy. Well, never a dull moment with this American Pinocchio. So, as I said, the Mueller investigation is about Russian interference in the U.S. elections that got Trump elected. Big story. But you know what? I am quite amazed at how the elephant in the room, almost 50 years, in fact, of interference by another foreign country is hardly ever mentioned. Hardly ever mentioned. And of course that country is Israel. In these recent elections that just happened in the United States, this past week, the pro-Israel groups were in overdrive, investing hugely, millions and millions of dollars, to ensure that congressmen and senators supported Israel. Let me just tell you something very quickly. There are something you can't give directly to a person who's standing for election, but you can give it via groups, organizations. They call them they've got all kinds of fancy names. You can say, you can call your group Movement for Democracy, or give it some fancy name. These groups are called PACs, Public Affairs Committees, and you can give money to them, and they can contribute to each congressperson. So here's an extract from a longish article from the website If Americans Knew, meaning most Americans don't know really what's happening in the country. So that website, you can go to it, it's called If Americans Knew. Go search for it and you might come across this article. Where are we? Yeah. A just released midterm election scoreboard shows that Israel partisans, that is supporters of Israel, have dominated Congress over the past 10 years, despite the preference of American voters who consistently wish even-handed policies and feel the U.S. gives Israel too much money. The detailed scoreboard on candidates for the Senate and House of Representatives shows that 28 pro-Israeli PACs, I told you PACs are groups that give the money on behalf of donors, 28 pro-Israeli PACs and numerous pro-Israel individuals have given candidates millions of dollars in campaign contributions. There are currently no pro-Palestine PACs, although one of the All right. The scoreboard presents 29 bills. This is how it works. 29 bills and resolutions that were introduced on behalf of Israel, right, were sent to the American Congress, and some were actually written by the biggest pro-Israeli organization known as APAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee. They were actually written and given to the congressman to introduce in the American Congress. 20 have passed into law or on record statement, many by unanimous consent. So 20 of the 29 bills in support of Israel, written by a pro-Israeli lobby, the biggest one, have been passed. Open Secrets, a project of the Center for Responsible Politics, points out few lobbies dedicated to international issues are so active and well-financed as the Israel lobby. Open Secrets continues, a powerful pro-Israel force has carved out an influential place in American campaigns in the form of super PAC mega donor Sheldon Adelson. Adelson's contributions to national political campaigns in 2018 alone reached over $113 million, and all to Republicans or conservatives. Hey, this one guy, Sheldon Adelson, I think he's got a whole lot of casinos all over. He has contributed just in 2018 $113 million to make sure that those congressmen vote in favor of Israel. So there you have it. Clear interference in the U.S. election process in support of a foreign country, which is Israel. But the big investigation today is about Russian interference in U.S. elections. Eh? Isn't it amazing? Are you amazed? Okay. Very quickly now, let's just see what else we've got. Yeah, of course, the continuing story of Jamal Khashoggi. So the latest news is that the search for his body has been called off. It has ended. Turkish authorities concluded that his body was chopped up and dissolved in acid. Traces of the chemicals were found at the residence of the Saudi Consul General, whose house is nearby, near the embassy, Saudi embassy in Istanbul. But the criminal investigation still continues. But again, I must ask the question, which I've done previously. If the Saudis claim that people at the top, meaning, of course, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, knew nothing about the killings and that it was carried out by a rogue unit, meaning people who acted on their own without instructions from the top, then it automatically, logically follows that these rogues, I think about 18 of them, should be arrested and charged for murder, because the Saudis themselves admitted that Khashoggi was murdered. They should be paraded in handcuffs in public, and all questions about what they did could be very easily answered within hours if they were interrogated. So why have the Saudis not given us the answers? In fact, answers that Turkey has been slowly finding out and releasing to the public. The Saudis said that the investigation would be open and transparent, and people responsible for the killing would be held accountable. I think, yes, these 18 will be held accountable without having to answer any questions at all. No trial, no nothing about what they did. They will be held accountable. They will be found guilty. Because if they reveal what they know, that would be very dangerous. So take a shortcut and make them accountable. So bottom line is, if they are gone, removed, then the whole issue will be over. Case closed. Dear listeners, those 18 men must be extremely nervous right now, because they know that they will be made the scapegoats And goats are usually sacrificed. A final word. Early today, that is Saturday, I put the TV on and there was an excellent documentary on BBC about MBS and the Khashoggi issue. Very interesting stuff. BBC usually rebroadcasts its documentary over and over during the day and over the next couple of days. So go to the BBC website and maybe they will give you the times for the rebroadcast, but you have to watch it. Fascinating stuff. Puts the whole story together. Right, last couple of minutes left and it's time for, you guessed it, Light at the End of the Tunnel. So there was this Maulana and the Muazzin, and they were standing on the roadside outside the masjid here in Lotus Park, Isipingo. And they were holding up a big sign, a big board, and on it was written, "The end is near. Turn around now before it's too late." What is written on the board? "The end is near. Turn around now before it's too late." Now, a car was going past and the driver stuck out his head. He was very cross and he said, "Hey, leave us alone, you stupid religious idiots." A few seconds later, from around the curve in the road, they heard a screeching of brakes and a very loud splash. The Maulana turned to the Muazzin and said, "Do you think that we should change the words on the board to say that the bridge is broken?" Right, this is Abi Dawood bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.